practitioners, ADA Sangindulce and Judge Skolarski. The panel discussed how the issue affects the county, what is being done about it, and how to handle the issue going forward.
Wicked hand of opioid abuse has reached out and grabbed so many in Luzerne County and in the country that nearly everyone knows someone touched by it. The opioid epidemic claimed nearly 200 lives in Luzerne County in the past year. Statewide, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, opioid overdose deaths have risen 24% in the past year. This astounding increase has drawn the attention of the media, politicians, law enforcement, medical practitioners, and the community alike. Wilkes University hosted a panel of doctors and law enforcement to discuss the issue. Dr. Thomas Franco, assistant professor of pharmacy practice at Wilkes, discussed the factors that have led to this public health crisis.
Heroin that was made back in the 60s, 70s, the purity of street-grade heroin at that time was probably in the 30s, 20, 30, 40% neck of the woods. Now, it's 95% pure. The cartels and who produce this have made exponential growths in their ability to make pure heroin. Again, nothing's going to be 100%, but 95% is pretty darn pure. So we're dealing with much more powerful heroin.
Dr. Franco notes that heroin isn't always just heroin, but a deadly mixture with synthetic opioids.
Additionally, we now have it being laced with fentanyl, carfentanyl, which is much more potent. It's easier to transport. You got to figure something that's 100 times more potent means I can carry 100 times less, and it's easier to get into the country. Most of our illicit fentanyl is coming from China. It's easy to get in here. It cannot be detected by a sniffing dog. Go to the airport and you see the dog says, "Don't touch me." He can smell morphine, heroin, stuff like that. Can't smell fentanyl. It's a synthetic drug. And all the now offshoots of fentanyl, which are becoming easier and easier to manufacture, it's virtually impossible to detect it from our traditional means, x-rays, the dogs, things like that.
These new, deadlier street drugs, along with abused prescriptions, put certain people at higher risk for addiction and overdose, according to Dr. David Withers, an addiction medicine practitioner at Geisinger Medical Center.
Well, it turns out that 80% of the population can either take drugs, not take drugs, drink, not drink, or they will have some experimentation, but what will happen is because of negative consequences, they'll put them down. What happens with the other 20%, half of them will get into real trouble. And so that's 10% of the total. And out of that, normally what it is over broad populations, 50% of this is genetic and the other 50% or so is environmental. You can't boil it down to an individual person. But if you look at large populations, those are the numbers that you'll get. I respectfully believe also that resilience is something that can be taught. Positive role models, competing positive behaviors.
Dr. Franco offered his suggestion on how to turn the tide in this massive struggle.
I think that the biggest thing that we need to stress is the stigma behind addiction. People shouldn't be afraid of it. It's a disease. It is not akin to having Parkinson's, to having diabetes, to having asthma. It's something that needs to be treated. It's something that needs to have care. It's something that needs lifestyle modification.
There are options for people with substance abuse issues. Luzerne County's Treatment Court, a program for adults charged with nonviolent drug addiction-related crimes, has a promising success rate, with graduates having a recidivism rate of just 13% in the first year. If you think having naloxone, an antidote to opioids that can reverse overdoses on hand, would be beneficial to you or a loved one, anyone in Pennsylvania can get a prescription for it at any pharmacy through insurance under a standing order from the Physician General. For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Station Manager Katie Pugh.
Immigration has become a hot issue, especially after this week. Program Director John Flynn attended an immigration and civil rights lecture hosted by the McGowan Center for Ethics.
The search for a more perfect union in the United States has experienced several setbacks since its founding. But although the civil rights movement ended many practices of discrimination against minorities, many American citizens are wondering if their dreams will ever become reality. The McGowan Center of Ethics and Social Responsibility at King's hosted Dr. Patricia Macias Rojas, an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Illinois in Chicago, for the 2017 Labor Day lecture. Her lecture, based on her award-winning book entitled From Deportation to Prison, The Politics of Immigration Enforcement in Post-Civil Rights America, looks at how the U.S. has handled undocumented immigrants since the end of the Civil Rights Movement. She began her discussion with the glance at early 20th century practices of handling immigration, when the U.S. government handled immigration as a work issue, not a crime issue, in which progressives pushed towards social and labor equality.
Immigrant advocates and reformers were successful in countering that rhetoric of criminality. And they also successfully pushed for equal protection and due process rights in both the criminal justice and the immigration systems. They mobilized against laws proposing to criminalize migration and to expand criminal deportation, mostly because they targeted long-term residents, mostly European immigrants with long-standing ties to the United States.
However, Dr. Rojas noted that when the government acted to criminalize illegal entry in 1929, labor activists pulled back on their efforts so the American Civil Liberties Union could testify before Congress.
So when in 1929 Congress proposed a bill to criminalize illegal entry and reentry, and also included this provision to expand criminal grounds for deportation, labor activists pushed back. So the ACLU testified before Congress against this bill, arguing, quote, no matter how wrong it is for an alien to come here without inspection, once he has become part of our society, he should not be thrust to the country that may be his native land.
She then turned toward the civil rights era, where crime became a central issue. Republican Party candidates such as Barry Goldwater in 1964 and Richard Nixon in 1972 used law and order rhetoric in their campaigns, but the media instead focused on the economic issues facing impacted communities. Then, after Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980 on his campaign promise to make America safer, Dr. Rojas suggested that while imprisonment rate tripled, it led to prison overcrowding.
The Department of Correction commissioners at the time were testifying before Congress that inmates were backed up in jails waiting to enter the system. So in one hearing on prison overcrowding, one legislator testified, quote, prisons everywhere are now bulging with far more people than their rated capacity. Recreation areas, tents, trailers have all been pressed into service to meet this crunch.
But then a California movement led by U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein and the GOP's Contract with America, both in 1994, shifted both political parties toward a law and order approach that culminated 2 years later when President Bill Clinton signed sweeping immigration reform that led to new immigration policies.
In short, it unraveled many of the procedural safeguards that reformers had fought for over a century. And what's fascinating about it is that its reach went beyond its initial targets of criminal aliens, that it affected the entire immigration system because it fundamentally restructured immigration enforcement.
Although President Obama had looked to cut illegal crime rates, there are few people that qualify to be considered undocumented immigrants, but it still does not underscore the fact that agents have had more power as a result.
So the reality on the ground is that few apprehended migrants actually qualify as these high priority targets or these terrorist threats and high security risks. Yet this congressional mandate to fill beds requires that agents, again, fill them. And so this gives agents considerably more discretion over how to classify immigrants as criminal or non-criminal. So following arrest, agents transport migrants to the nearest border patrol station. They process them through these databases, and then they decide, am I going to put you through the immigration system as a non-criminal, or am I going to push you into the criminal justice system and refer these cases for criminal prosecution?
For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Program Director John Flynn.
The record-breaking freshman class size has created a problem on campus. Parking. One of the draws of Kings for many is the ability for freshmen to have a car immediately on campus. Maggie Benkowski sat down with Assistant Security Director Mark Naylor to discuss the problem.
For those who don't know, Kings' freshman class of 2021 came in with well over 600 students. More than half of them brought their cars, creating less room in the already tight lots. The first week of school, commuters that came later than 9 o'clock were turned away and were made to park either in the square, in dirt lots, or on the road, as no spots were available. I was able to catch up with one of the drivers, whose name we left anonymously, as we talked about overcrowding, Jannetty's lot, overselling parking spots, and the chaos of parking the first week of school.
That's the first day. It should have, if you know there's 600 incoming or 680 incoming freshmen in March. Don't worry about the parking the first day that the students are here. And there was no security. I know one of the security guards called off, and they're lined up down Washington Street. green space that we have, we shouldn't have, I think, alongside the church. I'm not sure what their plans are up there, but that should be parking. Of course, crossing North Street is a real pain. This used to be all parking right here, but they made green space. I don't know. It's, I don't know how many years you've been here, but all along Castle, this whole parking lot, that was all extra parking. We get more students every year, and they never worry about the parking. I don't know how to alleviate it. They made freshmen go down to Genetti's.
Additionally, I got to speak to several commuters about the chaos that ensures inside of the lots. They told me about double parking, which makes the tots a lot tighter to navigate. Trying to open doors, getting through lanes, and trying to turn became a bigger problem as there is less spots. Additionally, security in the lots are seriously underwhelmed as cars are not monitored at all. A student was notified the second day of class about how her car was keyed and she got the last parking spot. But Kings would not do anything as there are no cameras to prove who did it. I also talked to Madison Hindermash, the same question about parking.
The parking situation on campus is definitely a big issue today. Many of us commuters have had a terrible situation with parking here on campus, and I refuse to pay so much when other local colleges are charging their college students less. I park along the streets of Wilkes-Barre and in a nearby parkade just because of the overcrowding of commuters and residents in the lots, and also because of the price. I walk the distance every day, and I really just think parking is a big issue, and I feel if they lowered the cost of parking and probably provided more lots for students to park in, we would have less of an issue with the parking situation.
Until then, we will continue checking in on the parking situation at King's.
For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Maggie Binkowski.
Coming up next, we'll listen to Politics This Week, get a sports update, and hear the weather for the weekend.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be warning signs of a gynecologic cancer. Cervical, ovarian, uterine, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers, and each has different warning signs and symptoms.
I had to go to the bathroom more often than usual, more urgently, too.
Feeling bloated for no reason? That's what I remember. And my periods lasted longer and were heavier than what was normal for me.
Even if I ate just a little bit, I felt full so fast.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. Know what's normal for you. And if you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey, it's Russell from The Crooks, and you're listening to WRKC Wilkes-Barre, 88.5 WRKC, Radio King's College.
The news at 5 continues on 88.5 WRKC Wilkes-Barre.
What's happening to DACA? Find out on Politics This Week. Attorney General Jeff Sessions formally announced the end of DACA earlier this week after a statement by President Trump. DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, will tentatively end in 6 months. DACA is a 2012 executive order that allows immigrants who enter the country as a minor to apply for deferred deportation status every 2 years. President Trump has asked Congress to create replacement legislation during this time, but some believe this is too short a period to create comprehensive immigration reform. The president, however, stated that if Congress can't pass alternative legislation, he will, quote-unquote, revisit the issue, and no action will be taken for immigrants currently protected under DACA in the next 6 months. Mixed reactions were seen from both sides of the aisle. Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey, known for his conservative views on immigration, released a statement on Facebook saying, "Children who were brought at a young age to the United States illegally are not at fault," but recommended a legislative solution to the issue. Hurricane Irma, the mega Category 5 hurricane off the coast of Florida, is creating a storm in politics as the vote to raise the debt ceiling draws near. Fox News reported on Thursday evening that President Trump struck a deal with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to eliminate the debt ceiling. House Speaker Paul Ryan promptly returned the fire by saying he will oppose such a measure. Many Republicans have changed tempo regarding the debt ceiling in order to provide more funds for the Hurricane Harvey victims and damage to be incurred by Hurricane Irma over the weekend. Speaker Ryan said to Fox News host Marth McCollum that, "As imperfect as this tool is, I always see this as a good tool for fiscal discipline," suggesting he would sooner cut funds to other programs to compensate for FEMA costs rather than raise the debt ceiling. Tensions between North Korea and practically the rest of the developed world have continued to escalate over the week. CNN reports the South Korean Prime Minister Lee Nak-yeon expects Kim Jong-un to test an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, at full distance on Saturday to mark the country's founding. The Prime Minister said the situation is, quote-unquote, very grave, and said there is, quote-unquote, not much time until North Korea achieves its complete nuclear armament. Russian President Vladimir Putin suggested on Thursday that the United States might be antagonizing Kim Jong-un by increasing pressure on Pyongyang. Putin, usually relatively quiet on the subject of North Korea, warned of a global catastrophe on Tuesday, according to CNN. Finally, Penn Live reports that Congressman Tom Marino, a Republican from the 10th District of Pennsylvania serving the northern tier in parts of Lackawanna County, is nominated for Senate approval for the position of drug czar. And this has been Politics This Week. For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Joshua Frankevich.
And here is a sports update. The Monarch football team has their first road game of the season as they travel to the defending MAC conference champion Stevenson University tomorrow at 12 noon. The Monarchs are coming off an impressive 30-27 victory over Moravian College. Kings is looking to improve to 2-0 for the first time since 1993. The Lady Monarch field hockey team looks for their first victory of the season in their first home game tomorrow at McCarthy Stadium against Susquehanna University at 1 p.m. The women's soccer team erupted for a 9-0 victory over Clark Summit University on Wednesday. This was the second highest goal total for the Lady Monarchs in program history. Danielle Putnam had a hat trick in the contest, scoring 3 goals. The Lady Monarchs traveled to Juniata College tomorrow for a 5 p.m. game. The Lady Monarchs look to improve to 3-0 on the season. The men's soccer team fell by a score of 2-1 against the University of Scranton on Wednesday night. The Monarchs travel to Juniata College tomorrow for a game at 7:30 p.m. And now for the weather. Tonight will be rainy with a low of 48. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with a high of 68. And Sunday will be sunny with a high of 71. Cantori Christus Regis is holding auditions tonight until 7 p.m. The 7th Annual Diversity Festival opens on Wednesday. This has been the WRKC News at 5. I'm Sports Director Dan Stokes. Have a good weekend, everybody.
This has been the News at 5 on WRKC, Radio Kings College, Wilkes-Barre.